Welcome to In the Studio, with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock bands.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today we go in the studio for the tragic story of the British quartet known as Bad Finger.
No matter where you go.
As far as putting the structure of a song together, we didn't have a clue. I mean, we used to cover Beatles songs when we were Bad Finger, even. You know, early days in the Ivies. We used to go out and play the Hollies and you know, the Animals and a lot of American music. But then we had to kind of wean in our own songs, which was very hard, because they did sound too poppy for me, you know. But eventually we got the art down and started coming together, you know.
Looking out of my lonely gloom, day after day.
We were at this time starting to find out that the managers, all this money we were supposed to have was gone. The only person who had access to it was Polly. And it's never been proven or anything like that, but we never got the money. You know, that's what I know. We never got the money.
Hi, this is Mike Gibbons.
Hi, this is Joey Mullen, and I'm in the studio with the best of Bad Finger.
Okay, here's a rock riddle for you. Besides the Beatles, who are the biggest sellers on Apple Records, the label owned by the Beatles? The answer is Bad Finger. This British foursome released a masterpiece album in 1972 called Straight Up that was produced by both George Harrison and Todd Rundgren, which is one of the finest pop rock albums I've ever heard. Bad Finger's Pete Ham and Tom Evans wrote Harry Nilsson's 1972 number one masterpiece, Without You. So why were the members of Bad Finger penniless by 1975? And what despair caused both Pete Ham and Tom Evans to commit suicide? We'll search for answers in the studio today with Bad Finger's drummer Mike Gibbons and guitarist-singer Joey Mullen. The Bad Finger story is a complex one, and a certain shorthand is necessary to follow all of the principles. First, there are the individual Beatles, owners of Apple Records, which they started in 1968, referred to here as John, that's John Lennon, George Harrison, McCartney, that's Beatle Paul, and Ringo, Beatle drummer Ringo Starr. Then there's Mal Evans, Neil Aspinall, and Derek Taylor, the three who actually ran the day-to-day operations of Apple Records. The Bad Finger story starts when the band was called the Ivies, managed by Englishman Bill Collins. Here's Bad Finger drummer Mike Gibbons.
Right, well, see, go back to Bill Collins, like the manager. See, nobody wrote songs before we met Bill, you know? I mean, Bill said, man, you want to make it? I don't want you to be like fancy guitar players. I want you to write songs. You know, because he was into the harmony thing and a good melody, you know. He was kind of old-fashioned guy. So he built us a studio, and he actually pushed us into doing it, you know. I mean, I had to learn to play a few acoustic guitars, the chords, you know what I mean? I always banged the piano because we had one at home when I was a kid. But as far as putting the structure of a song together, we didn't have a clue. I mean, we used to cover Beatles songs when we were Bad Finger, even. You know, early days in the Ivies. We used to go out and play the Hollies and, you know, the Animals and a lot of American music. But then we had to kind of wean in our own songs, which was very hard because they did sound too poppy for me, even, you know. But eventually we got the art down and started coming together, you know.
If you want it. You better hurry, 'cause it may not last.
Badfinger's first hit record. 1970's Come and Get It even predated Joey Mullen joining the band. But Come and Get It was a gift from a very famous benefactor. Here's Badfinger drummer Mike Gibbons.
We've been putting singles forward to Apple for quite a while, and nothing seemed to work for us, you know? And McCartney was offered to write the score for The Magic Christian, starring Ringo Starr and Peter Sellers. And he figured, well, Badfinger needs a single, you know what I'm saying? Well, we needed a name change from the Ivies, for one. And we needed a hit single. So he figured, wait a minute, let's try this Come and Get It on Badfinger, you know? Because he didn't want to put the time in to do the whole movie track. So he recorded that one song and gave us the recording, and we kind of copied it to the T, or we tried to, you know? And he was happy with the finished results. Then he put it forward to the movie producers, and they liked what they heard. And then he asked them if we could finish off the score with our own songs, and they said, yeah. So we had like Crimson Ship, Carry On Till Tomorrow. The next song we put forward was, I think it was No Matter What, and they rejected it. That, yeah, they wanted us to record It Don't Come Easy, okay, which is Ringo made it to number one with it. But we were like, well, listen, we songwriters, we want to do our own thing, you know? And we believed, like Mal produced No Matter What with us. And we thought it was like a winner, and they didn't. But we eventually, they gave us the benefit of the doubt, and they released it. Much to their amazement, it was a hit.
No Dice album. That's the classic No Matter What, a big hit in 1970 that proved their own writing strength. By this time, Badfinger had retained separate U.S. management to maximize their breaking success in the all-important American marketplace. It was a fateful decision when Badfinger hired Stan Polley as manager. Here's drummer Mike Gibbons.
In fact, the guy Barry Marshall introduced us to him. And Barry now, he did McCartney's tour as the booking agent. But in those old days, he was helping us out for getting local gigs in the Ivies. Anyway, he went to a meeting in New York, and Bill went with him, and they went to meet this guy, and they were impressed, because he was an impressive guy, you know? You know, he was like, he looked like a politician and a judge and a lawyer, you know what I mean? He was a professional, slick, yeah. You know, we said, yeah, he manages Lou Christie. I went, wow, really, that guy? I know him, like Al Cooper, bless him. Are you kidding me? This guy's got to be good, you know? Now, don't forget, our Bill Collins manager, this is a little bit over his head, you know what I mean? Fair play to Bill. Everybody knocks Bill in movies, books, and everything. But fair play to him. Without him, they wouldn't have had any of these songs, really, you know? I mean, we were starving, you know, and he led us in the right direction. And for people to get on his case, because he wasn't strong enough, okay? That's all it was. It wasn't like he was a rip-off, you know? He just got the wool pulled over his eyes like we all did. But hey, let's put it down to experience and a few million dollars down the tubes later. You know, you're playing Carnegie Hall on Wednesday and then you're signing on the unemployment line on the Wednesday. You know, hi, Mike, how you doing?
Oddly, even after Badfinger's No Matter What was so successful, no other single was released from the No Dice album by Apple Records. After a U.S. tour in the fall of 1970, Badfinger returned to London and started recording in early 1971. Again, Badfinger drummer Mike Gibbons.
I mean, Apple was getting out of whack, by the way, you know. So, and we were on the back burner, and because the Beatles were fighting amongst themselves and all that good stuff. Well, we had an inkling something going down, you know. For instance, at Apple, you used to see like McCartney walking around, and Harrison was always there, you know. You'd see John Lennon in a while, and they'd be in and out. They'd be into it, you know. And then lately, it was like, wait a minute, what's going on? You hardly ever saw Lennon. McCartney just disappeared off the face of the earth. And George would come in periodically, you know, to kick some Hell's Angels out or whatever, you know. And because Klein was moving in and, you know, it was, and McCartney was fighting with John, all that stuff. So we were kind of stuck in the middle there without no direction, you know. They bit too much off of that Apple, you know what I mean? There was too much. Everybody was ripping them off. Even the staff were taking furniture and carpet, you know what I mean? People would take cutting squares of carpet out to put in their apartments. I mean, things went missing all the time. It was ridiculous. Are you familiar with Richard DeLella's book, The Longest Cocktail Party? Richard DeLella was the house hippie at the time, you know, like typing with one finger and go for this and go for that kind of guy. But he was very smart and way ahead of his time, because he put a book together which was really close to the truth about what happened, because he was there in Derek Traylor's office like all the time. You know, he'd go and do errands for him and stuff. And it was the longest cocktail party. Everybody was like, you know, doing like psychedelics once in a while, you know, and the press office was like a bar, okay? You know, cocktails and, you know, and people smoking pot and things and whatever. And Derek would just sit there and tell lies to the press. In fact, he had a logo on the Apple paper. It said, Lies from Apple. Oh, yeah, it was out there, wasn't it? It was the 60s, well, early 70s by now, but it was very psychedelic, believe me.
That's true. There was trouble in paradise at the Beatles' own record label, Apple. Not the least of which was the fact that the Beatles themselves had broken up. It was public relations wizard Derek Taylor's unenviable job to manage the fallout, according to Badfinger's drummer Mike Gibbons.
We rehearsed in the basement. We made a little studio, you know, a rough demo studio. And then we went into the studios on our own later and did it ourselves. And in fact, Al Cooper ended up putting strings on some stuff in New York. And, you know, and then again, when we finished the whole thing ourselves, it was rejected by Apple. They thought it was not good enough, you know, technically speaking. I mean, we were always under pressure from our American management and stuff, you know, to go on the road to make him money, you know. Like at that point in time, we didn't know the money wasn't going in our bank accounts. We were rushed. In fact, we had two albums released in 1 year one time. I mean, which was unheard of. It was ridiculous. They didn't know which one to review, you know what I mean? It was ridiculous.
So now with Badfinger's follow-up album shelved, the band needed something akin to divine intervention. According to Badfinger's guitarist, songwriter Joey Molland, it was another Beatle to the rescue.
It seemed like George had listened to the record and decided that there was something on it, and decided in his own mind that he would produce a record for us. And, you know, we were kind of disappointed because we thought the record sounded like us. we were out playing on the road, and these were the songs that were coming to us. And what we were told was the album was coarse, you know, or the recording was not strong enough. It just wasn't polished enough, you know. So anyway, yeah, all of a sudden George is going to produce the record.
You keep me loving like crazy. You make my daisy go high. You treat me good, so lazy. You make me feel so alive. You get me feeling I'm okay. And I got nothing to hide. And if you're leaving for a while, babe, you know I'll die, babe. Babe, I die. I tell you I love you. I tell you no lie. I tell you I need you. And I want you by my side. Used to be cold and lonely. You came along with your smile. And if you leave, I'll cry, babe. You know I'll die, babe. Babe, I'll die.
From the album Straight Up, that's I'd Die, Babe, from Badfinger. Coming up next, more distractions and hurdles, but a major songwriter would quietly surface also. I'm Redbeard, you're in the studio for the best of Badfinger. Welcome back in the studio, I'm Redbeard with the best of Badfinger. It's interesting to note that of the songs on the album that Apple first rejected, precious few were written by Badfinger's Pete Ham. Yet when the Straight Up album finally is released, it contains Baby Blue and Day After Day, Badfinger's biggest hits. So was Pete Ham particularly keen to work with George Harrison as Badfinger's producer, or had Ham simply deferred initially to the more assertive writers, Joey Molland and Tom Evans in the band? Here's Badfinger drummer Mike Gibbons.
I think, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Well, yeah, listen, let me tell you something about culture, right? Like myself and Peter, we Welsh, okay? It's a very feminine culture, right? We're very shy, quiet people, okay? Now, the Liverpudlians, because Joey and Tommy were from Liverpool, they're very, like you know, Leninist. They're very hard, you know what I'm saying? And they push, you know what I mean? It's like Americans are tougher, you know what I'm saying? It's not like the Americans, they say to you, like, what can I do you for, you know? Now, in Wales, we'd say, what can I do for you? You know, yeah, they were assertive, and they did fight to get B-sides, because you'd make as much money on a B-side as an A-side, you know what I'm saying? But then again, we were a democratic band, and we split up the royalties in certain ways, you know? But, you know, suffice to say that everybody was hoped to be taken care of in the future, you know what I'm saying? So not one guy gets major rich and the other guys are pumping gas 30 years down the road, you know, which happens to a lot of bands, you know. I mean, I've seen it, man. I've seen, like, Jimi Hendrix's drummer. I mean, he was in Detroit about 15 years ago looking for a gig in the bars. Come on. You know, I mean, he didn't make any money. Now, see, Bill Collins wrote up a deal for the Ivies in the early days. It rolled over into Badfinger and to this day. So that, you know, everybody still to this day, the estates of Peter Ham and Evans and myself and Collins and everybody, we all receive ASCAP monies and we all receive Apple publishing monies and stuff. You know, so he was thinking ahead. He didn't want to leave anybody in the dirt, you know, at the end of it.
Yes.
guess I got what I deserved. Kept you waiting there too long, my love. All that time without a word. Didn't know you'd think that I'd forget. Or I'd regret. Special love.
Finger's number 14 hit in 1972, the song called Baby Blue, written by Pete Ham from the Straight Up album. But before Badfinger and George Harrison could complete it, the album was interrupted a second time. You see, massive monsoon rains had caused terrible famine near India in the country of Bangladesh, formerly East Pakistan. Indian classical sitar musician Ravi Shankar, who had recorded with the Beatles, reached out to his friend George Harrison. Here's Joey Mullen, guitarist and singer of Badfinger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he gets the phone call from Ravi about the Bangladesh tragedy. It was all over the news anyway. And, you know, he decides he's got to go and try and help these people. And so he tells us, you know, that he's going to go do that. And, he hopes we don't mind and everything. He apologizes. And we were kind of disappointed, actually, because he was great, you know, to work with. You know, in all the techniques of the studio, he wasn't like, I'm George Harrison out of the Beatles and don't talk to me. He would, you know, perfectly willing to pick up a guitar and sit right down in the track with you and play a bit of rhythm guitar or a bit of lead or whatever was called for. You know, he put up with our ineptitude. We were still learning to do things like backing vocals and stuff. So it would take us hours to do things. And he would sit there patiently, you know, not run out and grab food or whatever, you know what I mean? Not drink. He didn't drink at all. You know, he was very, very, uh, very straight, very, you know, it was great. It was a great experience. We were disappointed when he said he had to leave.
It was September 1971 before Apple Records could resume the Badfinger project. But a young American musician, the talented but precocious Todd Rundgren, was brought in to complete the album. Here's Badfinger's Joey Molland.
I had never heard of Todd Rundgren at the time. I guess he'd been successful in America with his band, the Nas. And, well, for some reason he impressed George, you know, to where George would turn over the project to him. We couldn't imagine George turning it over to somebody who couldn't handle it, you know. That just didn't seem, you know, possible. The one song that he worked on, I thought, a lot was the song of Pete's, was it Perfection? Yeah, it is a great tune. Yeah, we did it for years on stage. Well, we'd done a version of it, you know, just an acoustic version. But Peter's tempo on rhythm guitar was not really good. And without the drums in there, the tempo of the song seemed to vary. Now, Todd noticed this more than any of us, really, I've got to say. And he decided to put all those percussion things on there, and which was kind of weird, and I thought, but that was Todd's big, I think, contribution.
There is no real perfection. There'll be no perfect day. Just love is our connection. Truth in what we say. There's no good revolution. Just power changing hands. There is no straight solution. Except to understand. So listen to my song. Successful conversation. There's no good kind of killing. Just power taking life. It's all good blood that's spilling. To make a bigger knife. So listen to my song. Successful conversation. Successful conversation. Take you very far. Successful conversation. Will take you very far.
Here's another fine Pete Ham composition called Perfection. Great song by Badfinger from the Straight Up album. Next, Badfinger shoots straight up the charts. Apple sours. Fame and fortune turn to treachery, despair, and double tragedies. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the best of Badfinger. I'm Redbeard. Welcome back. Upon the release of Badfinger's Straight Up album in 1972, it turned out to be an unbelievably successful year. Day after day, climbed even higher than Baby Blue, with the former peaking at number 4. Coincidentally, Harry Nilsson decided to cover a Pete Ham Tom Evans song called Without You on his Nilsson Schmilsson critically acclaimed album, and Without You by Nilsson goes straight to number 1. Certainly, Badfinger was getting rich by now, right, Joey Molland?
When we'd done our business agreement with Polly and Five Arts and Badfinger Enterprises, we'd made an arrangement whereby we only got a certain amount of money, a salary a month, you know, $1,000 or 1500 or something like that. All the money was going was paid to Badfinger Enterprises in New York City. The money was then divided up, or supposed to be divided up among the members, you know, to what they'd earned, and supposed to be deposited in the bank without being actually credited to us because of taxes. This was the reasons we were given. And Polly and the company took their share in exchange for running the business and all that stuff. So we were taking our monthly salary, yeah, no matter where we were in the world, on tour or you know, recording or just on holiday, we still got our wages every week. The rest of the money was supposed to be banked. And yes, we were supposed to be getting rich. With three songs like that, huge songs on the radio, we were making a lot of money. And we were doing, I think, maybe 180 shows a year, you know, 160, 100, you know, a lot of shows. And we were selling, in America in particular, we were selling, I would think, between 5,000 and 7,000 tickets a night, maybe more. You know, we were playing armories and a place like Circus World, Florida. We'd play, you know, huge venues all over the place, big theatres and everything. And so we were definitely making the money. And we weren't spending it. We were staying in a Holiday Inn. It was $30 a night, you know.
Badfinger with Pete Ham's Day After Day from 1972's Straight Up album. But even as Badfinger's successes mounted, their record label, Apple, was turning rotten due to the breakup of Apple owners, the Beatles. The huge assets that they had amassed were being put at risk, and John Lennon hired Rolling Stones manager Alan Klein as Lennon's personal manager. The other three Beatles refused to sign with Klein. Mike Gibbons couldn't believe his eyes.
Well, they were crumbling, weren't they? And Klein was kind of picking up the scraps that nobody else ripped them off. I mean, Apple was just a mess, you know. I mean, it was unbelievably a mess. If you see the movie The Ruttles, you see the people carrying TVs and things out. That really did happen. I seen it happen. I saw it happen. It really did happen. There were gold albums and platinum album, whatever they used to have in those days. I mean, in the closets, in the toilets, and I mean, all over the place. Well, it's like the Hell's Angels came over. We was in Apple one day, and they brought their bikes, their children, their wives, and they camped in Apple in the press office, and they wouldn't leave. They just moved on in. Love, peace, and dope. You remember those days? Like they were going to be welcome. And it took, I mean, days and days and days they were there. In the end, George kicked them out. He went up to him and said, listen, you got to leave, you know what I mean? And fair enough, they didn't cause no trouble. They just split. But they were there for days. It was, people were, don't forget, they were on LSD and everything, you know? And not to mention, every time we went in there, we'd smoke a joint, obviously, in them days, because that was the cool thing to do. But it was like a Monty Python flying circus.
Joey Molland of Badfinger.
Apple had been great to us. We were maneuvered away from Apple by our managers and by Alan Klein, really. It was nothing to do with the group, and I'm sure it was nothing to do with the Beatles, you know what I mean? You know, we were being successful. We were being really honest about our music. We weren't coming down there wearing spandex and, you know, trying to be rock stars or anything. So I don't think they were looking to get rid of us. And I can only think that it was the business management, the Alan Klein and the Stan Polley thing. I don't even know, maybe even Bill Collins was involved with it, but we were definitely, the band was manoeuvred off out of Apple Records.
song. It's called Just a Chance, the lead-off song from Badfinger's Wish You Were Here album, 1974. Their first for their new label, Warner Brothers Records. Here's Badfinger guitarist Joey Molland.
We got $600,000 up front. The deal guaranteed us $3 million in royalties, and which was a lot of money. It was an excellent record deal. Anyway, a bunch of money went missing after we'd recorded Wish You Were Here. It must have been September. And it started to sell really well. It got great reviews. It was a good record. We were, at this time, starting to find out that the managers, all this money we were supposed to have was gone. The only person who had access to it was Polly. And it's never been proven or anything like that, but we never got the money. You know, that's what I know. We never got the money. When I found out about this myself, I was out in Los Angeles. I found out that Polly had been shopping Peter a solo deal. The group had never heard anything about it, and I doubt very much if Peter had. But he was shopping a deal for Peter with these different labels, and it happened that I met one of the presidents of the record label, and he told me. And it went from that into this thing where it turned out that everybody in the music business knew that this guy was just using our money, flying film producers in and, you know, getting hookers for him and just all sorts of stuff going on. And it was very embarrassing and a great shock to me, I'll tell you. Here I thought my life was set up and it wasn't at all. I went to a meeting with Polly. I set up a meeting with him as soon as I heard this. He, by this time, moved his office to Los Angeles. And I went over there with my wife. I had a meeting with him and I told him what I'd heard and what was going on, and I thought that it'd be best if we split our relationship or separated, you know. And he agreed to this, quite affable at the whole thing. All he wanted was, at this time though, you have to remember, we still had the remainder of the Warner Brothers contract to go. We still had another four albums, plus all the other options. And we still had the name of the band. We were still a very big band. So the main thrust was to get him out of the picture and find ourselves somebody, you know, who would help us. He agreed to this and he wanted something, $350,000, you know, which I thought we could raise. And I went back to London and I confronted the band with this. Nobody agreed with it. Peter was absolutely adamant that he just didn't believe it. He thought it was some kind of conspiracy from my wife. He thought it was something to do with my wife. He had this kind of Yoko Ono paranoia thing going on. And he stood up and left the group. He said, I'm not doing this. This whole thing went down in a 2 or 3 day period. We got notified that Wish You Were Here was pulled.
I could not care, factor would not try.
Name of the Game comes from 1972's Badfinger classic Straight Up. In the midst of all this turmoil, Badfinger's Pete Ham was starting to have an intimate relationship with one of the band's roadies' wives. Joey Mullen says that the karmic cost was high.
It cost Peter a lot of his, a lot of soul, I think. I saw that guy burn his own hands with cigarettes and stuff, trying to figure out what to do with himself. Now he knew that he'd broken one of his best friend's hearts. He was in love with the girl, and plus he had the rest of the, I guess, the pressure of the band on his mind. You know, they were the only signs I saw. But he did start to actually physically abuse himself.
Badfinger drummer Mike Gibbons.
Well, he had some guilt going on inside of him because he fell in love with the roadie's wife and moved in with her, you know. But I don't think that had anything to do with it, really. I think it was more of a personal insight. It's almost impossible to answer this question. I'm not a psychologist, but I'm sure there was something going on about him as a person himself, you know. I mean, everybody loved Pete, man, you know what I mean? I mean, he was a great guy, but I think inside that he didn't like himself, you know. I mean, you know, I don't want to make light of any suicides, you know what I'm saying? But some guy told me once, you know, that suicide's not the way. It's just the strongest form of self-criticism. And that's true. Don't forget, Pete was my best friend. It was me and him from Wales, you know what I'm saying? Joey and Tommy from Liverpool. So it was us against them, you know, not against, but I could relate to him and he could relate to me, you know?
On April 23rd, 1975, after a night of drinking with Badfinger bandmate Tom Evans, Pete Ham committed suicide by hanging himself. Joey Molland.
You asked, why didn't anybody ever sue Polly? Because the way that the thing was structured, we all had to do it together. Otherwise, it would have been me fighting against Pete and Tommy and Mike and Polly, you know, and Bill Collins as well. And there was no way Collins was going to change it. Collins, to this day, still defends Stan Polly. He still, to this day, defends Stan Polly. And after Peter had died, Collins flew over to see about taking a job with Polly. Even though Peter named Stan Polly in his suicide note, you know, "I'll take that soulless bastard Stan Polly with me," is written in that note.
Sweet Tuesday morning, came on your smile. All of my fears, they have left me. Places all around astound me. Seen the breaking of the souvenir. Men of brightness I can feel surrounding. It's the first time I've felt it for years. Sweet Tuesday morning, came a new smile. All around style me. Seen the breaking of the souvenir. In a brightness I can feel surround me. It's the first time I've felt it for
From the Straight Up album, that's Joey Mullen's Sweet Tuesday Morning. The tragedy of Badfinger continued after Pete Ham's suicide, with the suicide of Joey Mullen's sister-in-law, Mary, the shooting death of Mal Evans, the one-time Beatle roadie who signed and produced Badfinger, and the bizarre suicide by hanging of Badfinger's Tom Evans. How much did Pete Ham's suicide play in Tom Evans' death. Here's Badfinger's Mike Gibbons.
I think a lot. I mean, yeah. I mean, you could say it's contractual money grabbing, this, that, and the other, litigation. You can go on forever with the litigation, right? Because the band was in litigation, you know, because Apple had a bunch of money sitting there, and they didn't know who to give it to, you know? So they ended up giving it to the court and let them decide, you know what I mean? So we were in litigation, I mean, for 10 years, trying to sort out the monetary and the contractual obligations, okay? And, of course, it took a long time. That, compiled with his alcohol abuse, okay, because he got into it heavily. And, of course, he was always depressed about Pete. And I think what he did to copycat that was a statement right there, you know what I'm saying? Tommy was something else, man. He was a very, very deep character, you know? And he was down, and he was very down for a lot of years before he died, you know? I mean, I worked with him on and off, and it was impossible to work with him after a while because, you know, you get too drunk, you know, and depressed. You know, when you get drunk and depressed, you start reminiscing about bad things, you know, and you can't see the wood for the trees, you know. I wasn't surprised when I heard that news. I was not surprised, I can tell you that, in all truth.
From the 1979 Badfinger comeback album called Airwaves, featuring Joey Molland and Tom Evans, that's Love Is Gonna Come at Last. Badfinger drummer Mike Gibbons passed away in October 2005 in his sleep. leaving only Joey Mullen to witness the phenomenon of Badfinger's Baby Blue appearing in the highly watched finale of the cable TV series Breaking Bad. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this.